Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. James Dobson. This is Family Talk, and we're here in our studios in Colorado Springs to talk about the passing of one of the most courageous and influential women in America. I'm speaking of Mrs. Phyllis Schlafly. There's no way I can put into words the influence that she had not only on the conservative movement. In fact, she's called the mother of the conservative movement. But she had an impact on my life. I met her 34 years ago, and we worked together. She did, as I said yesterday, perhaps 15 or more radio broadcasts with me. And she was just a great lady of faith and a person who dedicated her life to the defense of unborn babies, religious liberty, and so many other conservative causes in this country. I shudder to think what would be happening in America today if it had not been for Phyllis Schlafly. Unfortunately, we have now lost many of the battles that she fought for, and I do hope and pray that there will be strong conservative, courageous men and women like Phyllis Schlafly who will come along and defend the things that she was so passionate about. That is, in fact, if you haven't noticed, what Family Talk is all about. That's why I'm still on the scene. That's why I haven't retired, and why I won't as long as the job is not done. And that's why we are dedicating these 3 days, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, to the memory of this great lady. She wrote a book called A Choice, Not an Echo, which was read by millions of people throughout this country. She founded the Eagle Forum, which is still one of the most influential conservative bodies in the country today. I talked a little bit about her accomplishments yesterday. Let's go ahead and hear the second part of an interview that I conducted with Phyllis Schlafly in 2011. And we were joined in that discussion by Phyllis's niece, Susan Vinker. And they were talking about the book that they co-authored together entitled The Flip Side of Feminism. You can get a notion from that title how Phyllis felt about the radical feminist movement, which was in its heyday when Phyllis came on the scenes. The subtitle of the book is What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. I thought this was a great interview, not because of me, the interviewer, but because of Phyllis Schlafly and her niece, who expressed things that I believe, and I think many of our listeners will too. Here, then, is part two of Phyllis Schlafly and Susan Vinker and their book, The Flip Side of Feminism. Just from an historical point of view, Phyllis, take us back to the days of the ERA and how you managed to stop that almost single-handedly. It was incredible to watch because both houses of Congress had already passed it. By the way, ERA stands for Equal Rights Amendment, and you took it on when nobody was on your side.
That's right. We had three presidents against us, Nixon and Ford and Carter, nearly all of Congress, 99% of the media, all the money that they could want, and Hollywood. And we beat them all. And it really is an inspiring example of how the grassroots can rise up and take on the whole establishment and win. And what we did was to show the handicaps, how ERA would hurt women. I testified in 41 state legislative hearings, and there never was any benefit. There was no benefit to women. I had sons and daughters about 18 or 20 then, and one of the first effects of ERA would have been to draft women, because we had a draft in 1972 when we were in a war, and the Draft Act is the classic sex discriminatory law. It says male citizens of age 18 must register. And my daughters thought, you're going to give us a constitutional amendment, and the first thing is we have to sign up for the draft like our brothers? You've got to be kidding. And so anyway, the fight went on, and we did beat them.
Separate restrooms, too. Didn't you make a case about that?
All kinds of bad effects. Getting rid of the laws that say the husband should support his wife. And there were so many bad effects. And then we realized we would have had same-sex marriage 30 years ago because you wouldn't be able to discriminate on account of sex.
Now, that would have been a constitutional amendment,
yes,
which required the state houses of government, three-quarters?
If three-fourths of the states ratified it, it would be part of the U.S. Constitution.
And you were down to three.
Yes.
I mean, they only needed three more states, and you took it on.
It's an incredible story, and we do have it in Chapter 2, by the way.
You know, Mrs. Slaffley, it is really too bad that our patriarchal society wouldn't allow you to be empowered to make change.
How did you do that in that system?
Held down so oppressively in the system.
But the feminists are really not for equality. Mm. They are for affirmative action for women, preferential treatment, and fundamentally they are for interchangeability of the sexes. They want you to be interchangeable in everything. And that's ridiculous. They're at war with human nature.
Well, that's very well said, Phyllis. And it's why you're a hero of mine for the way you stood up for what you just said, for those traditional values when there was no pro-family movement. Mm. You were truly a lone voice when you brought millions of women and men to an understanding of moral and conservative values, and I applaud you for that. Now, let's turn a corner and get back to the topic of your book, The Flip Side of Feminism. Christine, I invited you to be here with us today because you are so passionate about this book and this topic. Why don't you ask the first question?
Suzanne, I'd like to ask you about something you talked very openly about in your book. I think it's very provocative and will maybe offend some people, but you considered marriage and motherhood when you picked your career before college. I don't think a lot of young women do that. And I was wondering if you could possibly speak to the young women that are listening today and tell them what they need to know before they pick a career in
Christine,
college.
Christine, I know what you're talking about from the book, and that's a vitally important question because there is no one saying what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Explain it, Suzanne.
I hope I'm referring to what I think you're referring to. There is no question that the average young college woman today enters school and goes through those 4 years without giving any thought whatsoever to marriage and babies. They are there solely to get a degree and then plan a life that is going to revolve around this phenomenal life/career outside the home that is going to bring them the utmost of fulfillment, and they're going to have all these accolades and just feel so great about themselves. And, oh, by the way, if I get married and have children, that's great, but that's sort of on the periphery.
Family is an afterthought.
It's an afterthought. And my advice to those women is the complete opposite of the advice that they get. Because even though they're not going to think of it this way now, give them 10 years and they will. And that is that you should flip that plan entirely and assume that getting married and having children is going to be the most important thing in your life, the most satisfying thing in your life. Nothing will ever compare to it. One of the, I think, more provocative points that I did make in there that I think you're referring to is the fact that there is a biological clock. And that biological clock does tick, and it has a beginning and it has an end, and it may not be politically correct or it may not even be pleasant, but it's a fact. And it is a terrible disservice to encourage women to ignore that clock and to suggest that you don't have to worry about that till you get to it later. Hmm. I can't think of anything more horrific to say because you are messing with someone's life. Hmm. These women are getting to be 35, 36, 37 and realizing time is running out. My body's not cooperating. I have to go. It takes me a million shots just to get pregnant because I'm doing it so late. And that's, and some of them end up with only one child and they want more than one and they can't. That is a travesty, and it's a lie. Why would we do that to them?
Why, indeed, Suzanne. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking with empathy about the single woman who's out there, who hears what you're saying, and there's nothing she wants more. She wants a child to hold. She wants to be a mother. I'm one of those that believes there is a maternal instinct.
That's right.
And there is a great desire to be loved and to be embraced by a husband. And I don't want to make things worse for those single women out there who have done things right, but the Lord has not brought a man, a suitable man, into their lives. And as a result, they hear big men, they hear the gonging, the passage of time, and they know menopause is coming, and they know all about it, and they know when it typically occurs. And they realize they're not going to have that blessing of holding a child, or at least it hasn't materialized yet. I want to make sure that we are compassionate with those single women and that we are not unmindful of the pressures
and the pain
that she is experiencing. And I have met hundreds of them, and you have too. Suzanne, continue with your thought. What else do women need to know as they make decisions about their lives?
The other very taboo thing to say to young women is you need to look for a man who can support you. And the reason why you want to do that is not because you're never going to make your own money and go out into the world. It's because there's going to, you're going to hit a point, particularly in those years when the children are not in school, the first 5 years, when you are not going to want to be bothered with making an income because you're going to want to be with those babies. So that doesn't mean you have to find a rich man. It just means you have to find somebody who's ambitious and capable of holding down a job and finding a path that is consistent where he does not flounder. So another point is when I say that the reality is there are going to be some careers that are probably not going to be good options for you as a woman. Let me give you an example. I was speaking with a woman from the Boston Globe recently. She wanted to get my opinion for a piece she was writing. She ended up cutting it out and not including it at all. I think I made too much sense for her. She wanted me to say something really that she could get me on. But I said I have an 11-year-old daughter. And if we got into the conversation of what am I going to do in X number of years, and she comes to me and she says, Mom, I want to be a brain surgeon. And she said to me, the Boston Globe reporter, well, what would you say to her? And I paused for a moment because I knew that anything that I could say would be held against me. And I thought for a moment, and then I said, you know, I would ask her, okay, is there anything else that you want in your life? And if she presumably then says, well, I'd like to get married and have children too, I'd say, then you probably better pick something else. And here's why. These two things are going to conflict majorly. You are going to spend 10 years preparing for this major life as a brain surgeon, which is one kind of life, all-consuming. And then right when your body is winding down biologically, you want to get married and have children. That ain't going to work. That is a harsh reality. You've got to accept it. If you don't want to get married and have children, that's one thing. But if you do, this is a conflict, and I didn't make it. It's just the way it is. Yeah. So how do you make this work for you? Find something else that you want to do.
Sure.
And I think at this point, it would be important to say, we're not saying women shouldn't become doctors and lawyers. Mrs. Schlafly became a lawyer later.
And right. had six.
Well, I only went to law school after I was 50.
Exactly.
Yes, right. Yeah, so her trajectory is definitely like what we're saying. You a little bit of this here and then a little bit of this there at different times. She didn't do it all at once.
I think God knows what he's doing in sending children to young women.
You know, it's interesting. So many degrees women choose could force them out of the home. Mm-hmm. Or instead, they could take that education and use it to maybe enrich their kids' lives at some point. My mom's a great example of this. She had a college degree. Mm-hmm. She was a second grade teacher. And then when she chose to stay home with Danae and me, she used all of those skills to teach us. I mean, that's how I got my love of reading, because she's really, really smart.
Yes. Exactly.
And it made me a better
she's
person.
She's smart and she's at home? I don't think those two go together.
And now she just celebrated her 20th anniversary as the chairperson of the National Day of Prayer. And former President George Bush sent a video congratulating her on what she did after I left the home.
Ryan, what you just said, though, sets you up for the ridicule that comes from people who say, so you want them pregnant and barefoot. Mm. You want them in the kitchen and they can't do anything else because they're dumb. That's what they're going to say to you.
Have you met my wife?
Well, and that goes back to Phyllis's point that really the crux of the whole thing is about devaluing the role of what we then call the full-time homemaker.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Schlafly, why do you think there is such venom against the values and principles that you stood up for? I remember, you know, you were debating Betty Friedan years ago, and she made a pretty caustic statement against you. I'm sure you remember it.
Oh, yeah. She said you'd like to burn me at the stake.
Yeah. There's your tolerance.
And I think she really
there
meant
you go.
It.
You know,
why is there such deep-seated hatred towards your beliefs?
Well, most of the feminist leaders are bitter women. Many of them came out of dysfunctional homes. And what they tried to do was to make their own personal problems society's problems and pretend they were everybody's problems. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they built their movement. And they built it by a technique called consciousness-raising session, where they would get a lot of women together and then they would exchange their horror stories about how badly some man had treated them. And grievances are like flowers. If you water them, they will grow. Mm-hmm. And little grievances grew into big grievances. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they built their movement.
To be honest here, Lou Anne, I want to answer the question that you asked Phyllis, because I agree completely with her answers. But let's admit that there are a lot of women out there who have been abused by men. You know, there have been a lot of girls that have been sexually abused when they were in the preschool years and certainly through adolescence. And they've got a right to be angry because they have been badly mistreated. Mm-hmm. And there are also girls who during adolescence were made fun of and dropped by the guys that they wanted to be friends with and so on. So there is a reason for some of that anger that's out there. Would you agree with that? Phyllis, would you agree with that? I mean, that won't explain all of it, but it does happen.
I think everybody has problems. If there's somebody who doesn't have any problem, I would like to meet them. When I was growing up, we only had one problem. It was money. I grew up during the Depression. But now people have a lot of other problems. But that doesn't mean necessarily that it's a societal problem that needs a big grant from the federal government of taxpayers' money.
Or that it's characteristic of the entire masculine gender. Well,
that you're better off to have your babies before you get married. And when they started out, they called it the women's liberation movement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you have to ask yourself, what did they want to be liberated from? It was home, husband, family, and children.
Isn't it sad that they're making the male-female relationship, it's adversarial, instead of working with each other and partnering together and supporting? I mean, I look at my mom and dad. My mom has supported my dad infinitely, and my dad, again, has supported my mom in the exact same way. She's got a college degree. She's got a career. She's had two careers. She was a teacher before she became a mom, and then a mom as another career, and now chairperson of the National Day of Prayer. They work together. She doesn't view him as the oppressor.
I think that has been the number one biggest travesty of feminism is the terrible divide between men and women that exists today, and the fallout of obviously marriage and divorce and all of that.
You know, it's not rocket science that society works better when men and women cooperate with each other, especially with regard to the raising of children.
Yes.
I mean, how silly to think that makes sense, that you create World War III in the home while children are there. I mean, that can't work.
No.
And Ms. Magazine, in its beginning, promoted marriage contracts in which they would agree that husband did the dishes and the diapers 3 days a week, and the wife did it 3 days, and then they would fight over who did it on the seventh day. And that's ridiculous. My husband never changed a diaper. I didn't want him to.
Well, that's a little extreme, but that was not my story at all. And I'm happy to have my loving husband, who I'm sure is listening, help in that regard.
You know, my field is child development. And so where I had my most serious problem with the feminist, because I was in graduate school in the 60s and I witnessed all this, had to do with the feminist Gloria Steinem and Germaine Greer and so many others.
Who knew nothing about children.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yeah, right.
There's no evidence that they had ever had a class on child development, and they certainly didn't have children or had spent any time with children. They began telling the rest of the world how to raise their kids.
That is such a critical point, because I truly believe that most people don't realize that this major movement that has affected their very own lives and paths and choices was fraudulent, in that if you read and learn and know how it started with those folks you mentioned, not only did they have horrible upbringings and very troubled marriages and just angry, but they also had no experience with children. And children never come up, I might add, in a conversation on this debate, whether it's about, you know, work and family balance or feminism or whatever. We never talk about the children. And yet they're everything. Mm-hmm. If the children weren't there, we wouldn't even have a debate. Mm-hmm. Feminists will never talk about the needs of children because they don't get it. They don't have that not only as a priority, but they don't even have the information about what kids need. So they don't even touch that subject. That's usually where I try to get them, is where we're talking about children needs, because they have nothing. There's
so
no
you have
on that.
Marlo Thomas
yes.
writing a book, Free to Be You and Me, telling mothers especially to raise their little girls like little boys and raise their little boys like little girls.
Mm-hmm. And she never had children.
Yeah, and blaming the differences between them on a patriarchal society. Mm-hmm. It made no sense whatsoever. And again, Phil Donahue and the rest of the media bought into that. Mm-hmm. And validated it for 30 years.
Yep, that's right.
Before medical science proved that the brains are different.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, Christine and Ryan and Lou Ann, I'm enjoying myself and I don't want to stop.
I
think that there is another day here. We really ought to talk about some other issues that are in the book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say, that we just can't afford not to address. Mm-hmm. And so let's just continue. If you guys aren't completely worn out, we will do one more program right here, and then we will air that tomorrow.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. It's an honor to be with you.
Thank you so much. It was so great meeting you, really.
And Suzanne, thank you for this book and for having the courage to do it. I don't think it takes any courage for Phyllis to do it, because she's been at it for a long time. But for you as a young mother to do it, I think it does take a lot of courage. And you put it on the line, there are going to be a lot of people that will hate you for it.
Oh, they already do.
So what?
So what? Thank you very much.
Wow. Well, as you just heard, there has been a lot of powerful and meaningful content discussed in the studio today, and you may be one of the listeners who found it a bit controversial. The subject of feminism is definitely a catalyst for fostering dynamic conversations, and so if you want to be part of the discussion, we encourage you to share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page. Just go to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk while you're on Facebook. And while you're online, why don't you also go over to our website, drjamesdobson.org, to see the other resources that we have available, including the book we've been talking about, Phyllis Schlafly and Suzanne Venker's work called The Flip Side of Feminism. We at Family Talk are dedicated to bringing you content to inform, inspire, encourage, and instruct. And with that in mind, we appreciate your support, both prayerfully and financially. To find out how you can come alongside us to do both, go to drjamesdobson.org or give us a call at 877-732-6825. I'm Roger Marsh, and we hope to have you with us again tomorrow for the final installment of our interview with the late Phyllis Schlafly, along with Suzanne Venker, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Dr. Tim Flinton here for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Do you have a Facebook page? Log in, would you? And like Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk page right now. More than 4 million people have joined the family. Go to drjamesdobson.org, sign up, and right away you can check out what's playing on the broadcast. Share tips, interact with friends, and get up-to-the-minute news on issues that affect your family. Not only are you going to find encouragement, but it's a great way to pass along trusted advice and daily boost the encouragement factor to your community. There's a lot going on. Join the conversation on Facebook today. Go to drjamesdobson.org and find out how. drjamesdobson.org.